This is Radio Superior 1945, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from 1945. This is a true story of our past. Step back with us to another time. We bring you now inside the KUWS radio studios and the Martin and McKenna Show.
This is the voice from the head of the Great Lakes, station KUWS. Jack McKenna reminding you that if you tell where he's going, he may not get there. It's 6 o'clock Central Standard Wartime, Saturday, April 14th, 1945. Lou Martin is standing by with the 6 o'clock news. A local mother of five shares her thoughts on the passing of FDR. And the draft board chairman is in to tell us how not to celebrate VE Day. That figures. Who invites that guy anyway?
I don't. He just shows up.
Well, we've got to be the only radio station that does that. The 6 o'clock news is brought to you by Siegel Brothers, with welders' leather jackets for $8.10 and buckskin gloves for just $2.95. In Superior, it's Siegel's for work clothes. And good evening, Lou.
Good evening, Jack, and good listeners. The late president's body has arrived at the White House, and the Russians approach 0 hour on the Eastern Front. We begin our World Shortwave radio report from Washington.
This is the nation's capital. Lyle C. Wilson here. The body of President Roosevelt reached a sorrowful capital at 10 a.m. Eastern wartime this morning. President Truman and his cabinet were at Union Station a few minutes before the train pulled in. They were waiting to lead a mournful procession to the White House. Members of the late president's family were the first to enter the train, followed by President Truman. Brigadier General Elliott Roosevelt and his wife were followed by Admiral William Leahy, who was FDR's military chief of staff and War Mobilization Director Fred Vinson. The train was parked on a Union Station siding near a bustling freight depot. Crowds thronged as close as police would allow. At the rear of the president's rail car stood a huge caisson and seven white horses awaiting the body of the late president. The casket was lifted onto the caisson at 9:55 a.m., and the procession began its slow trip to the White House. Private funeral services were held there at 4 o'clock. Down Constitution Avenue, the team of horses drew the four-wheeled caisson. Wartime Washington, steeped in sorrow, offered a last, sad farewell to Franklin Delano Roosevelt, its first citizen for a dozen dramatic years. It was a capital in mourning, a hushed, somber contrast to the carnival atmosphere of other Roosevelt homecomings. The bustle of the capital was stilled for today by order of President Truman, who called the nation to prayer. The Episcopalian order for the burial of the dead was part of the funeral service at the White House in the East Room. Bishop Angus Dunn of Washington Episcopal Cathedral said, "Unto God's gracious mercy and protection we commit you." The final resting place lies near the Roosevelt Mansion, overlooking the placid Hudson River in Hyde Park, New York. It was an area Mr. Roosevelt loved. In the nation's capital, this is Lyle C. Wilson, United Press.
This is Jack Bell with President Truman. The new president is intensively preparing to take President Roosevelt's place in the Big Three, so he's passing the responsibilities of the United Nations Conference in San Francisco to other people. Those are people who have been organizing the event since it was announced after the Big Three Conference in Yalta. Faced with the necessity of familiarizing himself with all the details of Europe's tangled affairs, Mr. Truman has decided not to attend the United Nations Conference. It will be up to Secretary of State Edward Stettinius and seven other American delegates, including Republicans such as former Minnesota Governor Harold Stassen. The feeling in official circles is that when General Dwight D. Eisenhower officially declares the end of hostilities in Europe, the Big Three leaders will get together to work out economic and political problems of that torn continent. That may include demands for reparations from Soviet Premier Stalin, including an inventory of German factories that could be dismantled and shipped to Russia to replace shattered factories there. The question of prisoner labor will also come up, as well as civilian refugees. Mr. Harry S. Truman has inherited a full plate that he's got to clear. With the president, this is Jack Bell. Calling Europe, come in, Eddie Gilmore.
This is the Eastern Front, Eddie Gilmore reporting. Every sign indicates today that four massive Russian army groups are approaching 0 hour. Their objective? Destroy the German army from Silesia to the Baltic and take Berlin. The Russians are rested and ready for this campaign, which promises to destroy a principal part of Adolf Hitler's staggering military forces. This blow might result in the greatest battle of World War II. Even Berlin Radio is urging citizens to brace for the great Russian offensive and to link up with U.S. and British troops. Soviet Marshal Gregory Zhukov's 1st White Russian Army is just 30 miles due east of Berlin, staged to make a frontal blow on the city. It is said here at the front that Premier Stalin will throw the greatest force of the war into this fray. Marshal Zhukov, who was the defender of Moscow when all looked bleak in 1941, may well be the man upon whom the burden will fall to lead this spearhead. On the Eastern Front, this is Eddie Gilmore, calling the Western Front.
This is the Third Reich, Wes Gallagher with the American Ninth Army. The Ninth won a second crossing over the Elbe River today, menacing the outer defenses of Berlin. First and Third Army tanks hurtled past the besieged Leipzig, nearing a link-up with their Red Army counterparts deep in Saxony, 88 miles from the Russian lines and 38 miles from Dresden. To all practical purposes, Germany was bisected from Berlin to its south. Direct communications and the superhighway to Munich have been cut. General Omar Bradley's armies tighten the siege around Leipzig, where it is reported 1 million German civilians await the Americans. The 1st and 9th Armies virtually eliminated the Ruhr pocket, taking 114,000 German soldiers trapped there prisoner. I can tell you the fighting remains intense, and flak from Berlin defenses to the Elbe is heavy. Meanwhile, General George S. Patton's 3rd Army is within 25 miles of Czechoslovakia, and Canadian forces fought inside the Dutch cities of Arnhem and Apeldoorn. With the 9th Army along the Elbe River in Germany, this is Wes Gallagher calling Pacific Headquarters. Come in, Hawaii.
This is Pearl Harbor. Frank Tremaine, your correspondent. The Japanese palace and shrine have been hit by American bombs. Fires were reported in the Emperor's Imperial Palace, and Japan's revered mighty shrine was destroyed in today's superfortress raid on Tokyo. This was reported by Japanese radio, recorded by the U.S. Federal Communications Commission. Tokyo radio reported the fires were extinguished and that 41 of the 170 raiders were shot down and damaged. Another Imperial communique reports Japanese suicide planes continuing their attack on American ships off Okinawa, where fighting remains fierce. Okinawa is just 325 miles south of mainland Japan. A more candid report from Tokyo Radio asserts that the battle for Okinawa seems to be changing, for the worse. In Pearl, then, this is Frank Tremaine reporting.
This bulletin just in. British troops of the Canadian First Army have captured the Dutch city of Arnhem. The victory comes after 40 straight hours of fighting through the barricaded streets of Arnhem. KUWS News Time is 6:07. Jack McKenna has this word from our sponsor.
Indeed I have, Lou, and I thank you. And this is not pertaining to your work clothes. You have suits. These men have real work clothes, and they can buy them at Siegel's now for a very fair price. For example, sanforized matched Oshkosh shirts, tan, teal, or blue, $1.95. Sturdy, long-wearing work shoes, and they're important, just $5.95 a pair. Sanforized whipcord work jackets, just $2.95. And for you welders out there, boy, you will go through the clothes fast. Leather clothes, better quality, heat-resisting leather jackets, $8.10. Welder's mitts, $1.95. And buckskin, $2.95. Siegel Brothers at 1120 and 22 Tower Avenue in Superior, Wisconsin, where the men are outfitted. Lou?
Superior joins Upper Wisconsin and the nation in mourning the death Thursday of President Roosevelt. Memorial services were held by the Superior Ministerial Association at the Palace Theater at 2 o'clock today. As always, Catholic churches were open for prayer today, with special memorial services planned for Sunday in other churches. Prayers were also offered by the Akedat Olam Synagogue on Hammond and 6th, led by Rabbi Alex Hyatt. Globe Shipyard workers gathered at 12:30 today for a memorial service. The Retail Merchants Association said that stores closed at 1 o'clock today, while grocery stores ended business at 3 o'clock. But the main community gathering was at the Palace Theater. The service opened with the singing of the Central High School Choir. Ministerial Association President Reverend Gideon Crane, he opened, while Reverend Harold Nye read scripture, and the Reverend Guy Hill led the prayers. Ashland paid tribute to the fallen president today. Mayor Gus Johnson spoke about the shock and grief everybody felt upon hearing the news. A litany for the dead was held today in Ashland at the Episcopal Church, the Reverend M. G. Argo officiating. Private Lawrence Craig of Ashland was reported killed in fighting in Germany. The 21-year-old son of Mr. and Mrs. Joseph Craig of 3rd Avenue East was killed March the 23rd. He saw action in France, Belgium, and Luxembourg before going to Germany. He was born in Odena. A Marine from Superior kept the supplies flowing during the Battle of Iwo Jima. KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson reports.
We all have read how terrible the Battle of Iwo was, Lou, and one of our own sons was right there in the thick of it. Marine Private First Class Marion Davis of Superior trundled his bulldozer through the wreckage on the beach of Iwo Jima, helping unload vital supplies, allowing the Marines to push off the beach. For 36 hours, Private Davis dodged artillery fire, which plastered the area. Fully exposed in the perch of his dozer, he pushed together road ramps for the invasion craft. When he wasn't doing that, he pushed vehicles stuck in the volcanic ash. Once, as he was pulling a Jeep and its trailer to firmer footing, a mortar shell hit the Jeep, scattering metal fragments. Chunks of jagged steel riddled the beach from other mortars, but Private Davis hung in there to get the job done. He emerged without a scratch. He said, quoting him now from an Associated Press story, "I'll never forget that beach as we landed on that third day. I've never seen anything like it before, and I hope I never see anything like it again." And Private Marion Davis had seen a lot of action going into the Iwo Jima battle. He fought in Saipan and Tinianlu. One other note, Private Davis learned how to operate a Caterpillar tractor at logging camps in the Great North Woods.
Thanks, Mike. In other news, several hundred pounds of smelt have been caught in Shawabigan Bay. This is the first time that smelt ever appeared in the Ashland Harbor. The smelt, which are in full spawn, arrived in large numbers along the bayshore this week. And finally, Jack and good listeners, former Mayor Bryn Ausby says the late President Roosevelt considered spending his summer vacations in Superior in 1937. Mayor Ausby invited the president to enjoy the moderate summer weather. To make sure that he got the invitation, he asked the United States Senator F. Ryan Duffy to deliver it. This was back in the summer of 1937, before the world erupted into war. Mayor Ausby produced a letter from the president's secretary thanking him for the offer, but was sorry the president couldn't accept at that time. But it didn't end there. A personally signed letter from President Roosevelt, dated July the 8th, 1937, said that he appreciated the kind invitation and he regretted that it would not be possible this year. Senator Duffy was told later that the president would consider vacationing here another year. I'm afraid things got too busy for the president in the following years, Jack.
We could have had him on our radio show.
I can see it now. The president sitting over there and everybody else but me asking questions. That's how our interviews generally work out.
I suppose it'd be tough to keep George G. Newton or the draft board chairman away.
You're not known for sitting quietly either.
Hear, hear. I like to participate, that's all. Lou Martin, the bee's knees of newsmen. Let's check our forecast for this Saturday, April the 14th, 1945. Warmer tonight and tomorrow, but cloudy. Sunday's high will be around 57 degrees. On this national day of mourning, the music will be in keeping, friends. Let's begin with Glenn Miller and his orchestra and Serenade in Blue on the Martin and McKenna Show. Thank you.
serenade in blue. I'm somewhere in another world alone with you, sharing all the joys we used to know. Again, your face comes back to me, just like the theme of some forgotten melody in the album of my memory. Serenade. Small cafe, a crowded floor,
and as we dance the night away, I hear you say forevermore,
and then the song became a sigh, forevermore became a lie.
But you remain in my heart, so
tell me, darling, is there still a spark?
Glenn Miller and his orchestra and Serenade in Blue on station KUWS. By the way, Major Miller remains missing in action after disappearing last December on his way to Paris. Bus drivers on the Duluth Superior Bus Company have new weapon to get passengers to move to the back of the bus. What with gas and tire rationing, we need to make room for war workers on their way to the shipyards and plants.
Bus drivers have a secret weapon?
Yep. It's called the shaker backer, to be used only in wartime emergencies. I understand it's very effective. It's especially useful in the case of the aisle blocker, who will be doggoned if he'll move back. He's paid his token, so by golly, he'll stand where he wants to, even if it slows up bus loading or people have to be left at the corner because there's not enough room on the bus. Want to know how it works?
A secret weapon on local buses?
That's what I said. Bus drivers have a large jack, not me, and can elevate the front of the bus from his driver's seat, slanting the front of the bus up in the air, forcing everyone to the back of the bus.
And that's the shaker backer?
It certainly is. Our friends, Duluth Superior Bus Company, simply asks you to make room and move to the back of the bus.
I've been duped by a paid advertisement. How embarrassing.
Well, like I said, you're the bee's knees, pal. Now here's Joe Stafford and Long Ago and Far Away on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Just one look and then I knew. land is mine. The dream I dreamed was not denied me. Just one look and then I knew that all I long for long ago was
Joe Stafford and Long Ago and Far Away on station KUWS.
In keeping with this National Day of Mourning, in respect to our late President Franklin Roosevelt, I'd like to introduce Mrs. C.B. Everett of Hewitt Avenue. Good evening, ma'am.
Good evening, Mr. Martin and Mr. McKenna. Wasn't it a shock?
Terrible. Just terrible.
I mean, who would have thought?
How could you think that?
So sad, too.
Poor Mrs. Roosevelt.
Oh, dear me, yes. It's saddest for those left behind.
Isn't it, though?
Thank you, Jack. Mrs. Everett, I understand that you have a message you'd like to tell everyone as we unite in our grief.
Indeed, yes. I have 5 sons in the service. That makes me just an average American mother, like any other mom listening out there. I always liked to think of President Roosevelt as a soldier fighting side by side with my sons. That's how it is, isn't it? We're all in this together. As their commander-in-chief, he guided them this far along a glorious and victorious path. He will serve as a beacon to every mother's son along the rest of the way.
Amen, Mother Everett.
Tomorrow, let us send a letter to our sons, husbands, or fathers on the fighting front. Assure them that we stand squarely behind our new president, whose hands this great responsibility has been passed. Yes, friends, write to that soldier tomorrow.
That's great, Mother Everett. Just great. Lou?
Very nice, Mrs. C.B. Everett of Superior. Thank you.
He doesn't say much, does he, Jack?
Unlike a certain chatty announcer.
He gives the quietest interviews in town. Here's a new one from the 1945 Hit Parade, friends. This is Freddie Martin and his orchestra and symphony on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Seems to rise. Then
it softly dies. Symphony, sing to me. Then we kiss, and it's clear to me, when you're near to me, you are my symphony.
Marty Martin and his orchestra with vocals by Clyde Rogers and Symphony on station KUWS.
Let me introduce and perhaps even ask a few questions, if somebody doesn't mind or interrupt me, Douglas County Draft Board number 2 Chairman, Colonel Joe Raffaele.
What kind of cockamamie introduction was that?
Apparently, I'm a Budinsky.
Truer words than ever spoke.
He never lets me do interviews. Always interrupting. Maybe it's my fault. Everybody likes Jack better.
Yeah, everybody does, and I'll tell you what. They don't like Jack that much either. So you two ladies are having a spat, huh? Well, there's no time for that. I've got an important message for everyone.
After you, Lou.
Thank you. And what, Colonel, would the message be?
Well, it comes right from the top, McMartin. The U.S. Army, Sixth Service Command, and the Superior V.E. Day Committee, of which I am part. Attention! All people of Superior and Northern Wisconsin.
That's one guy who doesn't really need a microphone.
Yeah, button it, McCorkle. All right, one. VE Day does not mean the war is over. We still have a bit of business to do with Japan. Two. VE Day should be a day of grateful solemnity. I told him not to use that word. I hate that word. All right, four. When VE Day comes, these are the suggested rules of conduct for that day. Suggested my foot. I also hate the word suggested. We need to command people. Command! Anywho, A, all taverns will be closed by city ordinance. B, all stores will close. C, no whistles, bells, horns, noisemakers should be used, and no celebration on VE Day. I tried to get them to ban swing music on the radio, but they said that was going a bit too far.
This is pretty strict stuff, Colonel.
And I'm not done yet. D, there will be no parades or outdoor demonstrations. And F, children will be dismissed early from school so they can go to church services.
No yahooing?
Only a yahoo would yahoo.
No whoopee?
Permission denied.
No yucks?
Yuck!
Not even a teehee?
Real men don't teehee, McCorkle. That is all. Nice interview, McMartin.
Thanks. Draft Board Chairman Joe Raffaele.
Here's one on this National Day of Mourning from Dinah Shore. It's called Blues in the Night on the McMartin and McGonagall Show.
My mama done told me, a man's gonna sweet talk and give you the glad eye. But when that sweet talk is done, a man is a two-faced, a worrisome thing who'll leave you to sing the blues in the night. Fallen here, the trains are calling. Who is my mama? Done told me. Hear that lonesome whistle blowing across the trestle. Who is my mama? Done told me. A hoot, a hoot. Old pickety clack is echoing back the blues in the night. The evening breeze will start the trees to cry, and the moon will dim its light. from Memphis to Mobile, from Memphis to St. Joe, wherever the four winds blow. I've been to big towns, I've heard Miss Big Talk, but there is one thing I know. A man is a two-faced, a worrisome thing who'll leave you to sing the blues in the night. La, la, la. My mama done told me there's blues in the night.
Dinah Shore and Blues in the Night on station KUWS. Jeez, Lou. I didn't mean to interrupt another interview.
Oh, that's all right. The Colonel's a pain anyway. The only question I wanted to ask him is what happened to number 3 and E?
You know, he's not good at counting or the alphabet.
It's hard to think about having a party these days anyway. Maybe the VE Day Committee is right. I have one more news story that I'd like to pass along in memory of President Roosevelt. Had he lived, he would have given a radio address from Warm Springs last night. He had already written the speech on Wednesday, the night before his death. In it, Mr. Roosevelt wanted to send a message to Americans, not just about defeating the enemy and ending the war, but to also put an end to the beginning of wars. He said that wars are out of date, and we as a civilization must not try to bring change through war anymore. He said to do that, we must end ignorance, prejudice, fear, and greed, which made this horrible war possible. He ended his speech by saying, the only limits to tomorrow will be the doubts we have today. He said we must move ahead with a strong faith to work for peace as a nation.
That speech is too good to not be heard. Thanks, Lou. Like I said, you're the bee's knees. Friends, we'll be back, same time, same place on your radio dial, the good Lord willing, and we keep the faith. For Lou Martin, then, this is Jack McKenna reminding you that war bonds mean freedom.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1945, an original weekly production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Other performances by Tom Martinson, Joel Anderson, John Munson, Kathy Loxo. All events reported on Radio Superior 1945 are actual accounts from the editions of the Superior Evening Telegram. Join us next week for more Radio Superior. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.